Greg will be presenting on interseeded cover crop impacts on soybean yields in a highly variable climate. Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you, Nathan. Hi, I'm Greg Reichs. I'm a research associate in the South Dakota State University Plant Science Department. I'm going to talk today about interseeded cover crop impacts on soybean yields in a highly variable climate. So, in introduction, cover crops in a rotation should reduce soil erosion and off-site nutrient movement, reduce nitrate leaching, build soil organic matter, improve soil structure, and provide source of livestock feed as forage. I'm sure there's many more, but we only have so much time. So, integrating cover crops into South Dakota row crop production poses many challenges because if we plant after harvest, we're looking into late September at the earliest, probably into October. And this is probably going to be too late for establishment due to cold and dry conditions that typically occur at that time of year, and that can lead to poor or no seed germination. So, and if we do get germination and subsequent emergence, there's only a limited time for growth, maybe in a little bit into November. So one option to get around this short time frame might be interseeding into a growing corn or soybean crop during the summer months. So you could say that we hypothesize that to produce desirable amounts of cover crop biomass, we're going to need to interseed either prior to the end of the critical weed-free period or at leaf, or just prior to leaf senescence of the soybean. Okay, so our objective was to examine the impact of in-season cover crop seeding on soybean yields and biomass production. Because after all, we don't want this. This was cover crop seeded at V2 in 2013 near Aurora, South Dakota. We had plenty of dry matter produced, 2,500 kilograms per hectare, but unfortunately we lost 37% of our yield there as a consequence. So that little study led to a more expanded study, and that would include a cool season blend of forage radish at 4.5 kilograms per hectare with crimson clover at 17 kilograms per hectare. Another treatment we had in there was cowpea, which is a warm season crop at 34 kilograms per hectare. Now, it's important to note that the cool season cover crop blend, that has the potential to keep going after soybean harvest in our part of the world, which is normally harvest in the last week of September, first week of October, whereas the cowpea, very frost-sensitive species, so either the frost or the combine is going to get it, and there's going to be most likely no growth during the October months. We also had a treatment where we put the two of these together, not in the same furrow, but in separate furrows. Those were about 20 centimeters apart. So each of the single species was, was put in a single furrow. And then when we put them together, it was two furrows between 76 centimeter spaced soybean rows. Our seeding dates, we had R1, which is right at the first flower around July 10th. The canopy was about half closed at that time. Our second seeding date was a few weeks later, around the 25th of July. By then, the canopy was either completely closed or very, very close. And then we had one later at R7, later in the year. By that time, the soybeans, the seeds, had, they're at full size, and the foliage is just beginning to senesce. So we also stuck in a broadcast application at this time, besides the drilling, because that technique gets quite a bit of attention there, broadcasting seed right before leaf drop, with hopes that the falling leaves onto the seed will promote germination. So here's our location of our small plots. We had one, we'll call this Aurora site here, our east central location, and Beersford, our southeastern South Dakota location. So both of these sites, they're put into very deep, well-drained prairie soils. So you're looking at 0 to 2% slope. Really the main difference, the soil survey classifies our Aurora site as being a frigid environment, where the Beersford, our southeastern site, is being mesic. So the planting, we didn't use any off-the-wall maturity ratings here. Everything was pretty well normal for the areas that it was put into. So 2014, we were planted our beans in mid-May, which is a pretty desirable time for us to plant soybeans without yield loss. The 2015 studies, though, were put into a soybean crop that was planted in June, however. So here's what our crop looked like at the R1 seeding date near Beersford on July 9th. This is our southeastern site again. You can see the canopy's about half closed there, and it's about 30 centimeters tall. So on to the results. Here's our, I'm going to start off by saying a 2014 biomass production. It was there, but it just didn't yield all that great, so we're going to focus our attention mostly on 2015 for this. A lot of 2014's problem was just we had a really, really dry fall that year. So when you look at biomass production here, you can see I have these split out into the different planting dates. The green, for example, is our R1 seeding. Our R2 seeding is pink, and R7 is blue. So you can see the top producer at our southeast location for in terms of total biomass in the right column there. You can see, there we go. 203 kilograms per hectare was just cow pea solo, and that was significantly more than any other treatment we saw in any of the four site years. Not a spectacular biomass yield, but what this does show is that there is potential here. When you look at, for example, forage radish, you can see our R1 seeded is looking better than any of the later seeding dates. Crimson clover, kind of a big disappointment in this study. You can see the best we ever got was 30 kilograms per hectare. That was done right before leaf drop drilled. And that's only, 30 kilograms per hectare is only double the biomass weight of the seed planted. So not too great. So here's what that 203 kilograms of cow peas per hectare looked like the day before harvest this year. You can see we had a really late frost this year. So that's a warm season plant, and it's still going there. And surprisingly, that really didn't cause any harvesting problems. So now heading up the road to our Aurora site, that's our east central site. This is a biomass production. Fairly similar to Beersford, except the cow peas weren't near as prolific down there. You can see, though, that same kind of trend I was pointing out, the forage radish. It looked better when you seed that earlier in the year. So what that's showing is maybe we have potential to grow even more forage radish if we can seed even earlier than R1. So I'm going to talk about yields now. Speaking of R1, this was probably one of the more interesting parts of the study. We were getting a yield just due to competition from the cover crops, but at R1, we were getting a 6.5% yield increase by interseeding that cover crop over our no control, and that was regardless of species. These are all four site years I pooled together into this. There were no site by year by interaction, so we just put them all together. So, but then you go 2 weeks later at R2, and that totally diminished. We didn't have that anymore. So that definitely needs more investigation in future studies. Now, we shifted things a little bit this year, or I should say added things. We added some on-farm trials as well. We had this five-row cover crop interseeder built, and we could put a single row of cover crops in between two soybean rows. And we did this really because we need to examine the variability within a field. As you can see here, you look in this particular field, this isn't like a small plot site. We got shorter, yellower beans right there, and many places throughout. So our sites were, again, Volga is our east central, we'll call it, right near the South Dakota State University campus in Brookings. And then instead of south, this time we went north up towards North Dakota to a little town called Bristol. We'll call that our northeastern site. For this, I didn't use the cow pea, radish, that type of treatment. Instead, I used this commercially available mix I discovered, and it had five different species. I figured it'd be kind of neat to see what actually comes out of this. And it's actually intended for a fly-on surface broadcast. So this, we really didn't have I wasn't able to get the on-farm data analyzed prior to this meeting, but I can definitely touch on a lot of the things I've seen along the way, just all the sampling I've been doing this fall. So really what stuck out the most was that this mix grew best in poorly drained lowlands, where the soybeans were shorter. So So for instance, at harvest, it wasn't uncommon to see the soybeans range from half a meter to 0.9 meters tall within the same field. So the 800 we produced biomass, I saw one point where we produced 800 kilograms of total biomass per hectare in a lowland area at our northeastern site, and that was in late September, the day before our soybean harvest. And you remember what we had in the small plot? We topped out at 200 with the cowpeas. So this just shows that our shorter beans are could very well be better for doing this. And the majority of that 800 kilograms per hectare in this low spot, the on-farm trial was annual ryegrass. So I'll be putting the rest of that together in the coming weeks. I'm pretty excited to see what happens. So this here, this is our that same place I was talking about with the 800 kilograms per hectare. This is that low spot, a nice long stretch of it too. This picture I took a week ago today, it looks like. So this is the probably the best cover crop growth I'd seen out of any of our trials. And this was interseeded R2 on August 6th. This is that same spot. We had some nice big roots there on the radish on the right here and turnip on the left. This is our other on-farm site, our East Central, we'll call it. This one we didn't quite have the extensive lengths of good cover crop growth like the northeastern site, but in this field had more tile in it, and that probably explains a lot of that for our drainage. But you can still see here we had no growth for almost a quarter mile from the road up until this patch, and we had some good brassica and ryegrass in lower areas, then coming out the hill a little bit of ryegrass and no growth again. Here's that same area in the same field. With these on-farm studies, I also tried to simulate some broadcasting. Even though I didn't have an airplane for myself for doing this, I went out and did some 3 meter by 3 meter squares off to the side of our drilled strips. And what do you people think looks better? I mean, I think it's quite apparent the drill at R2 on July 17th, and that's only done with one-third the seeding rate by drilling. So the broadcasting here, yeah, on July, the same date, that's three times the seeding rate. And this one, even worse, we have broadcast. There is done on just before leaf drop, that same high seeding rate. And here's just one more place in that field. This was a higher spot where a very gravelly upland here where the soybeans were shorter as well. There appears to be some potential there, too. So in summary, interseeding cover crops appears promising because substantially more biomass can be produced at dramatically reduced seeding rates compared to a surface broadcast. We just really need to work on producing even more now, especially in taller soybeans. You know, do we grow more rows? Do we start a little earlier than R1? We have a lot to do there. So soybean yields were also increased by 6.5% when averaged over 4 site years, when cover crops were interseeded at R1 versus no cover crop at all. And we need to better understand that mechanism, why that's occurring, and also if we can maybe even get more than 6.5%. We need to also, based on preliminary on-farm research, it also appears that lower yielding environments, such as poorly drained lowlands, drier upland areas, may have the best potential for biomass production. And we're going to really look at using different data layers like yield monitor data, soil survey, imagery, see if we can help identify some of those areas. I'd like to thank the South Dakota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, as well as our on-farm cooperators, John Rapp near Bristol, and for use of his tractor as well, and John Kleinjohn near Volga. That concludes my presentation. I'll gladly take any questions.
Thanks, Greg. Questions for Greg?
Go ahead.
R7?
Say again?
How did you plant at R7?
The question was, how did I plant at R7? We did a single furrow between the rows, like we did in the earlier seeding dates, and we also did a broadcast just by hand. Now, it's just kind of as the leaves were starting to turn yellow.
So there's an actual planter going in at R7?
It's a hand-push seeder. In the small plots, we did a hand-push seeder. We couldn't turn our big cover crop seeder around. It just takes too much real estate to use that thing, so you gotta use it in the field. So.
Another question? One more question for Greg.
Did you run a planter in the control at R1?
Well, we did a cultivation, the whole thing, before our initial seeding date, just with a cultivator to loosen the soil since the ground is so hard, and that would have included our control plots as well.
But at R1, but you do an empty planter pass on your control.
We did not on that one, so. Yes. The question is, could I comment on previous herbicide carryover from crops? I can't confirm that, but I know one of the site, or Volga site, did have Treflan put down. I'm not sure what the other one had. The one that did really well, I'm not sure what that had, if that says anything. So, but even with Treflan, I mean, we had places in there that looked really well still, so I'd speculate we didn't have herbicide problems, but I'm not certain. So,
thanks, Greg.
Thank you.